Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you are listening to the show for the first time because the audience is growing, you are listening to the only show that asserts a constitutional solution to getting the general government back into the framework of the Constitution. If you want to discuss how we do that, and you want to, the best way to get your arms around this and to understand all of this is just go through the podcast, which you can find at reclaimingtherepublic.org. Just look for the Red State Talk Radio podcast. Those buttons or links are on the right-hand side. And there you go. You can start, you know, getting your mind wrapped around an audit and Republic Review and so forth. The number to call in, if you've just got some questions, would be 215-867-8255. That would be 215-TOP-TALK for those who need that little extra help. I do sometimes. And so the three major reasons why you want to download these podcasts in the first place. One is that, again, this is the only show on air that is actually asserting a constitutional solution to federal government overreach. Secondly, the content on this show will refer to content in previous shows and keeping current with today as well as in the future as well as in the past. You kind of have to listen to these podcasts to understand Platonism and those types of things. And third, bear in mind the content on the show is not temporary. I don't sit and linger over the current news events of what happened, you know, what happened today, such as the, you know, things happening at the White House, the news of the moment, because that is temporary. That's ephemeral. That is not permanent. What I do is I'll look at a news event as it relates to the Constitution and try to give you that constitutional perspective, because that constitutional perspective should span the test of time. 50 years from now, it'll still be relevant because there'll still be probably some type of shenanigans that'll be attempted, or maybe they'll still be doing. Maybe we won't get the federal government and we'll have Trump in office and other good people that will forego the collapse of America. But either way, those are three good reasons why you want to download the podcast. And I would also say that there's that video on the Take Action button on reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you just go down underneath the presentation slides, there's a link to the YouTube video. I would highly recommend you watch the first 30 minutes. That is a presentation I give that really helps set an understanding of what the Constitution is and how the framers defined it, as well as how we have strayed away from that and what we need to do to get back in line with that, or at least get the federal government back in line with that. Because if the federal government is complying to the Constitution, most of our worries, over 90% of our worries will just go away. And before this show, as I always check and scan and I look through the news, I could not find any sign, hide, or hair of the federal government giving up any of its unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. And again, if you're just listening to the show for the first time, you're going to get into it, and I will actually prove that the 12 of the executive departments, from the Department of Interior to the Department of Homeland Security, those departments that have been created since that time to this time, are all unconstitutional. I provide the insights from Madison as well as the rest of the framers during the ratification debates, precisely how locked down and what they had to do and so forth. So anyway, I will just tell you that there is no sign of the federal government. And to be honest, I this is more of a marketing thing. They're not going to do this on their own. You have to understand that we're going to have to force them to comply. It's like when kids are so emboldened and so enabled in what the heck they think they're doing that you can't stop them. Then you have to stand up and you have to assert your parental authority, or your contractual authority over your subcontractor and say, look, that's not in the contract. You can't do that. And we're stepping in. So therefore, we have to do it. We're going to have to step in. And we're going to need to get the states to do that. It's not we the people. It is those legislators. That's why when people say, oh, we've got to educate everybody. No, we only need to educate 5,445 men and women in this republic to do the good deeds for saving America and our republic. And so I have this standing question. If you're interested, whoever wants to call and discuss this question, it is, what or where in the Constitution does the federal government gain the authority from the states to create, manage, and manage any type of land for reservation purposes, whether that's forestry, whether that's parks, whether that's for people? Doesn't matter. Where in the Constitution do they have this authority to do that? Because they can only get that authority from the states. So let me jump into one more news item. We're coming close to that special week where we're having Red Pill Expo out in the Spokane, Washington area. So if you want to be there, I will be there. I will probably be there one or two of the days, but I will be there. And that will be going from the 21st to the 23rd of June. So go to redpillexpo.org. And so I hope to see you there. Look me up. I will probably be hanging out at the, because I know I'll be there for an interview. They want to interview me at the Patriot Soapbox YouTube channel. They're going to be exhibiting there. I may be at some other exhibits as well. But anyway, by all means, if you're going to be there, let me know. I will. I don't think I'm going to take any books. I'm not a book peddler. But I will say this, back to that question. If you do call and you want to discuss, and it doesn't matter, you don't have to get it right, wrong, or indifferent. If you want to discuss it, I will give you a set of my books, which is my first and second book. My third book still has, it's done. It's just not, I'm not publishing it until we're well underway in moving forward, getting more and more states coming to the table to do the audit. So with that, you're running out of time. You got, I think, 3 weeks. I think it's 3 weeks away from the 21st to the 23rd. Actually, it's just less than 3 weeks now. So anywho, in the news, because this isn't covering the news itself, but this is interesting how the UN is getting into our knickers in determining what we need to do in stopping illegal immigration. And so they're basically making a call now to call out the U.S. in halting our separating of these illegal immigrants or these illegal aliens and their families. The problem isn't necessarily whether we're separating them. The problem is that we should never have been allowing, for political purposes, the Democrats and the progressives in allowing these people to illegally gain access to be able to come here. They're basically trespassing, because that's what they're doing. They are trespassing in a foreign land. They have no sovereignty. They are subjects of a separate sovereign, which means that they're subjects of Mexico, South America, Saudi Arabia, wherever they're coming from through the southern border. They are sovereigns, or they're subjects to other sovereigns. They have not pledged allegiance, nor have they gone through the process to apply to become U.S. citizens. What they want to do is they want to come here and they want to undermine, and the Democrats are letting them do it. You can't not tell me that that is not treasonous behavior, allowing people to come here without the intent of really becoming and assimilating into the United States with the design of undermining our constitutional republic. That in itself is, if you understand the oath of a citizen, that is giving aid to enemies, foreign and domestic. So they're giving aid to domestic enemies by allowing them to come here. And even worse, they're allowing them and registering them to vote. California, a lot of what you would consider the progressive states are doing it. That's a no-brainer. But you'll be surprised that you will find that even in conservative states where there's still a large population center that is very liberal, North Carolina is one of those because they've got illegal aliens getting registered there. It's happening all over the United States. So what you think is only happening in California, it may have started there, but they've learned how to skin the cat, and now they're just duplicating those processes. And they're, you know, it's all about TQM, right? They're out there improving processes so that they can become more efficient and effective in undermining our constitutional republic. Isn't that great? You know, that's how you round your rock to roll. Anyway, one other thing, and I've got 1 minute left to cover this, but there are some key primaries today. And one of those primaries I announced a couple of weeks ago, and it's unfortunate I was unable to really get engaged. I reached out to a lot of these people, or not a lot, but at least a quarter of the candidates that are running in South Dakota. And I really did not get a nibble or a bite. And I think the difference why I was able to get more enticement, or I should say more interest in Idaho than I got in South Dakota, is because in Idaho, a lot of those races were contended, or I should say there were contenders, there were opponents challenging the incumbent. In South Dakota and in North Dakota, there are lots of seats that have really no opponents. They're just unchallenged seats. And I spoke to a gentleman yesterday who is applying in North Dakota for, I think, the Senate. And I don't think he has a challenger. And this is his first time. It's like it's just an open seat. Now he's going to become a senator in the great state of North Dakota. So for what it's worth, I will continue to try to reach out because we still have time between now and November to hopefully get some of these people on board with signing a pledge that they are all about supporting the Constitution. I would hate to think that this is just a dead-end road for us, but nevertheless, it's not a dead end at this point because we've got a commercial break, and I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And so I was just kind of highlighting South Dakota out of the list of eight in the primaries today. California actually will, I think it'll be a pretty interesting race because there is a good likelihood that there may be some seats coming up that will be only Republican. See, if you're not aware, there are these states, Washington State's one of them, California is one of them, that has pulled the wool over their electorate's eyes, and they basically said, well, we want to reward the top two contenders in the primaries, so they have the Democrats and the Republicans and all these other parties, but it doesn't matter. It's not the top two in the Republican Party, top two in the Democratic Party. It is the top two overall in finishing. And so there have always been, especially when you want to start stacking the deck, it makes it really easy for you to, if you only have two Democrats and then you have lots of Republicans, like the last presidential race, you could easily get yourself into a situation where you don't have any Republicans because you've watered down the field too much. Now, that doesn't apply to federal races, but it does apply to state races. And so anyway, California may pan out to be kind of interesting because there have been a few races where they've watered down the Democratic side. Apparently they didn't learn. And so there may be some only Republicans in a few of the seats. Montana is also today, New Mexico, Alabama, Iowa, Mississippi, and New Jersey. So we'll find out how things pan out. And I still have to wonder, why are all of these states, if you look at how many primaries have already been conducted, the general election is way out in November. There's a lot of time between now and then. Why is it that there are so many primaries so early? What is the rush? And most every single one of these states, whoever wins the primary basically wins the enchilada. So, why are you doing it so early? Why is it that you're forcing these challengers to have to really, hit the ground running so fast and so hard, they just ain't got time to cover all that ground? And especially if you look at the filing time compared to the primary time, when you can start campaigning and everything else, it really stacks the deck for the incumbent. If you want to change the swamp in your state, force the primary to come at a later date in the year. These states that are doing it in April, May, early May, mid-May, or even earlier than that, and you look at these states and you go, you got to be kidding me. People are still buried in snow or are thawing out at this point. They've got way too many things on their mind to be able to focus on the election. The election shouldn't be driving people's lives this way. It should literally be forcing the primaries. I would think August would be a reasonable time for a primary, maybe July, but anything June or before, that's way too early. Too many seats are, a slam dunk from the primary to the general election. So that's why I think August and September, you have plenty of time to now for 2 months, take the gloves off and really go after the other party or what have you. it makes no sense to me why they're giving them 6 months or even more to, you know, face their opponents and challengers who don't have a chance in heck of making that race. Or I don't know, I would probably say over 70% of the seats across America are already sealed and done based on the primary output. So why is it that we allow them to give the incumbents such an advantage? The incumbents are doing this, you know. They're the ones that are setting these primaries and elections and so forth because it is what's best to for their career and to keeping them in office. I mean, they're creatures of you know, having to put bread on the table. They are creatures of need as well as anybody else. And so, anyway, it just boggles my mind. And if you're in any of these states that have early primaries like Idaho and so forth, please pound your state legislators and getting them to fixing this problem. I will, I said yesterday that we're going to be coming up on Salt Lake, and Salt Lake is June 12th, which is a week from today. So anyway, let me, without any further ado, let's dive in to these ratification debates. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to start off with the excellency, Mr. John Hancock, the Mr. John Hancock. Put your John Hancock here, John Hancock. And what he said, and how I believe it literally changed the landscape of the ratifying process of the Constitution, as well as he started the real heat for the Bill of Rights. And so I'll get into this. But before I get into the Massachusetts, I want to give you a preview of what's coming up, because I was going to do the Pennsylvania ratification debates next, but I'm not going to. The reason being is that there's just enough circling right now in D.C. with the Eagles not showing up. I don't want people to get all upset because we're talking Pennsylvania next. So what I want to do is I want to talk about North Carolina. It may have been an insignificant ratification process because bottom line, the federal government was still going forward, but I want to plant this seed that regardless of when the state went through the ratification process, it may have been done after the federal government had already been formed. But I will tell you that what they were doing, what they were discussing is equally applicable as they were defining the federal government, the Constitution, and so forth. So every single one of these ratification debates, especially those states that actually argued, actually went through the process of defining every line, reading through it, like New York. New York literally went through it line by line, and some states didn't. I mean, Massachusetts kind of glossed over some spots. I mean, I look at Massachusetts as one of those that they were already predisposed to ratify the Constitution, even though there was a lot of anti-federalist up there. They're kind of a small state. They were kind of looking and they were kind of already developed. And so they had a greater need in the success of the Union. Some of these smaller states, definitely. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they were quick to rubber stamp it. It was the big states, it was the states that really had their own economy and so forth that were slow to ratifying and trying to figure out, well, what's going on and so forth. And as I already have shared with you, New York had ratified literally after Virginia had. And as I proved to you, it literally changed the sentiments in those New York ratification debates, because as soon as they found out that Virginia had ratified, that means that the Constitutional Republic was going to formally form because they had the commerce necessary. They had 10 states that had ratified. They were moving forward. And so New York was going, well, what are we going to do here? Are we going to literally not be a part of this? I mean, that, as I proved to you, that was literally going through their minds. And that's what shifted so many of the anti-federalists over because, you know, hey, we still had this hope if Virginia was going to not ratify, but that was not the case. And so anyway, What I want to get into, and I've got about a minute and a half. Basically, the recorder had written this, and he says, when the convention met in the afternoon, and this is post somebody making a motion, and he kind of covers it again, and he says, His Excellency John Hancock, the President, observed that a motion had been made and seconded that this convention do assent and ratify the Constitution, which had been under consideration, and that he had, in the former part of the day, intimated his intention of submitting a proposition to the convention. And so let me kind of highlight this. Here is basically John Hancock recognizing that they're just going to kind of push this thing, let's call it, off the ledge. You know, we're just going to go dive in with this. And he basically believed that they were going to ratify it anyway, even though it seemed like the votes were kind of tight. I honestly believe, and based on the way the arguments were going, it seemed like there was more of a concern, not over the supremacy of the federal government, but this was one of the very few ratification debates where they talked a lot about religious freedoms, and they centered a lot of it around their religious faith and so forth. And of course, these are the Puritans. And so we're going to get back into what he actually proposed, and you're going to see how he literally changed the landscape for the Constitution in the remaining ratification debates. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Pat,
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so Mr. Hancock moves forward by saying, "My motive," says he, "arises from my earnest desire to this convention, my fellow citizens and the public at large, that this convention may adopt such a form as may extend its good influence to every part of the United States and advance the prosperity of the whole world." His situation, His Excellency said, had not permitted him to enter into the debates of this convention because he was the presiding president and he was making sure decorum was being met and so forth. It, however, appeared to him necessary from what he had been advanced in them to adopt the form of government proposed. But observing a diversity of sentiment in the gentlemen of the convention, he had frequently had conversations with them on the subject, and from this conversation he was induced to propose them whether the introduction of some general amendments would not be attended to with happiest consequences. For that purpose, he should, with the leave of the Honorable Convention, should have submit their for their consideration a proposition in order to remove the doubts and quiet the apprehensions of the gentlemen. And if, any degree, the object should be acquired, he should feel himself perfectly satisfied. He should therefore submit them, for he was, he said, unable to go more largely into the subject if his abilities would permit him, relying on the candor of the convention to bear him witness that his wishes for a good constitution were sincere. This, gentlemen, concluded His Excellency, is the proposition which I had to make, and I submit to you for your consideration with the sincerest wish that it may have the tendency to promote a spirit of union." And so he basically provided them these amendments. And I went through them yesterday, and basically Samuel Adams kind of went through those, and he kind of agreed to them, supported them. He was very, very supportive of these. And most of these were, again, things, the very first and foremost thing that he asserted was that anything that was not explicitly reserved or delegated to the general government were reserved to the states and to the people. And that is the 10th Amendment. So it's interesting that the very first amendment that was thrown out in all of the conventions was the demand that the states maintain sovereignty over all things not delegated. So my friends, how is it that because the federal government was never delegated the power for the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Welfare, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the Environmental Protection Agency, all of these things, how is it that we have this monstrosity of government that we're facing? It is because of federal tyranny. That is pure and simple the truth. So I have to throw it out there again. What does it take? How much evidence do I have to give you to prove that all things that were not delegated were retained? Even though we're not retaining them, doesn't mean that the federal government is legitimately exercising powers that was delegated. It is not. The only process, as Madison pointed out, the only process is through the Article 5 process. And so you have to amend the Constitution to be able to constitutionally exercise those powers. And so let me move on. And this next comment is a long one. And this is Reverend Mr. Thatcher. And so I kind of want to go through this because he reinforces a lot of these things that I think this is the quintessential Massachusetts focus for their ratification debates. And so he says, with respect to the first of these considerations, I trust there is no man in his senses but what will own that the whole country hath largely felt the want of energy in the general government. And I'll have to break here. It is difficult reading this vernacular because they spoke very, very. It's not what the way we speak today. And so it's kind of difficult because you, am I reading that right? And yeah, you are. But anyway, while we were at war with Britain, common danger produced a common union. But the cause being removed, the effect ceased also. Nay, I do not know, but we may safely add that union produced by uniform danger was still inadequate to general and national purposes. This commonwealth, with a generous, disinterested regard to the good of the whole, appeared foremost in the day of danger. At the conclusion of the late war, 2/3 of the Continental Army were from Massachusetts. Isn't that amazing? He's going to give you some insights here. Their provision and their clothing proceeded also in a great measure from our extraordinary exertions. The people did this in the fullest confidence that when peace and tranquility were restored from the honor and the justice of our sister states, our supernumerary expenses would be abundantly repaid. But alas, how much hath our expectation been blasted? The Congress, through willing, yet had no power to do justice. The small district of Rhode Island put a negative upon the collected wisdom of the continent. This was done not by those who are the patrons of the present infamous system of paper currency, but by that part of them who now call themselves honest men. We have made exertions to stop the importation of foreign luxuries. Our brethren in the neighboring states, from the view of local advantages, have taken occasion to distress us upon the same account. They have encouraged where we have prohibited, and by those iniquitous measures have made our virtue and public spirit an additional cause of our calamity. Nor have our calamities been local. They have reached to all parts of the United States, and I have produced dissipation and indigence at home and contempt in foreign countries. On the other hand, the haughty Spaniard has deprived us of the navigation of the river of the Mississippi. On the other hand, the British nation are, by extravagant duties, running our fishery. Our sailors are enslaved by the pirates of Algiers. Our credit is reduced to so low an ebb that American faith is a proverbial expression of perfidy. As Punic faith was among the Romans, thus we have suffered every species of infamy abroad and poverty at home. Such, in fact, have been our calamities as are enough to convince the most skeptical among us of the want of a general government in which energy and vigor should be established and at the same time the rights and liberties of the people preserved. A constitution has been presented to us, which was composed and planned by men who, in the council and field, have, in the most conspicuous office, served their country in the late war. It comes authenticated by a man who, without any pecuniary reward, commanded our army and who retired to a private station with more pleasure than he left it. I do not say, Mr. President, that this proves the form of government to be perfect or that it is an unanswerable argument that we should adopt it, but it is a reason why we should examine it and care and caution and that we ought not rashly, precipitately to reject it. I will be objected. There are more powers granted than are necessary and that it tends to destroy the local governments of the particular states and that it will eventually end either in aristocracy or despotism. To answer this objection, two considerations should be taken into view: the situation of the continent when a constitution was formed and the impossibility of preserving a perfect sovereignty in the states after necessary powers were ceded to a supreme council of the whole. As to the first, let us candidly examine the state of these republics from New Hampshire to Georgia and see how far vigor and energy required. And so this is really interesting because he's going to be getting ready to poke these other states in the eye at of course, they're not at their expense, but at these other states' expenses. Because as he was saying, Massachusetts was one of the first to pay their debt. Virginia was another. But I will say this, that I'm at a hard break, and I will continue this great speech when I come right back. Thank you very much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so what we've got here is we've got, let me get the name correct here. This is Mr. Thatcher, who is a reverend up in the the state of Massachusetts, and he's pointing out how Massachusetts has been the one that basically they were arming the army, they were staffing the army, and they were supporting the army more than any other state in the union. And I guess they could brag that they were really the ones that were responsible for winning that war, because if you look at what it took, it was really more of I don't want to say an attrition of bodies, but more of an attrition of interest. There seemed to have been less interest
as the war proceeded on and more people wanted kind of an end to it. And again, this war was not fought with 100% of Americans behind it. It was a very small minority. That minority being up north in Massachusetts understood that they had been impressed and they had all sorts of problems. So they wanted to make sure that they put an end to this war because they didn't want the British to come back up there and make them miserable. So anyway, this good man goes on and says, as to the first, let's candidly examine the states of these republics from New Hampshire to Georgia and see how far vigor and energy were required. During the session of the Lay Convention, Massachusetts was on the point of a civil war in Vermont and New Hampshire, and a great disaffectionate to their several governments prevailed among the people. New York absolutely refused complying with the requisitions of Congress. In Virginia, armed men endeavored to stop the courts of justice. In South Carolina, creditors, by law, were obligated to receive barren and useless land for contracts made in silver and gold. I pass over the instance of Rhode Island. Their conduct was notorious. In some states, laws were made directly against the Treaty of Peace. In others, statutes were enacted which clashed directly against any federal union. New lands sufficient to discharge a great part of the continental debt intruded upon by needy adventurers are frontier settlements exposed to the ravages of the Indians, while the several states were unable or unwilling to relieve their distress. Lay all those circumstances together, and you will find some apology for those gentlemen who framed this Constitution. I trust you make charitably assign other motives for their conduct than a design to enslave their country and to parcel out for themselves its honors and emoluments. The second consideration deserves its weight. Can these local governments be sufficient to protect us from foreign enemies or from disaffection at home? 13 states have formed already. The same number are probably to be formed from the lands not yet cultivated. Of the former, yet smaller divisions may be made. The province of Maine hath desired a separation in time. A separation may take place. Who knows? This is a good glance of history and the paradigms of these different states. Who knows? Because Maine actually did come into the Union. Who knows, but what the same may happen with the respect to the old colony of Plymouth. Now conceive the numbers of states increased, their boundaries lessened, their interests clashing. How easy to prey to a foreign power, how liable to war among themselves. Let these arguments be weighed, and I dare say, sir, there is no man but what would conceive that a coercive power over the whole, searching through all parts of the system, is necessary to the preservation and happiness of the whole people. But I readily grant all of these reasons are not sufficient to surrender up the essential liberties of the people. Do we surrender them? This Constitution hath been compared both by its defenders and opponents to the British government. In my view of it, there is a great difference. In Britain, the government is said to consist of three forms: monarchy, aristocracy, and democracy, but in fact is but a few removes from absolute despotism. In the crown is vested the power of adding at its pleasure to the second branch, of nominating to all the places of honor and emolument, of purchasing by its immense revenues the suffrage of the House of Commons. The voice of the people is but the echo of the king, and their boasted privileges lie entirely at his mercy. In this proposed form, each branch of government is derived either mediately or directly from the people. The lower house are elected directly by those persons who are qualified to vote for them, representatives of the state, and at the expiration of 2 years become private men unless their past conduct entitles them to a future election. The Senate are elected by the legislatures of the different states and represent their sovereignty, pointing out the two constituents. The states are the constituents and the people here. These powers are a check on each other and can never be made either dependent or one another or independent of the people. The president is chosen by electors who are appointed by the people. The high courts of justice arise from the president and the Senate, but yet the ministers of them can be removed only upon bad behavior. The independence of judges is one of the most favorable circumstances to public liberty, for when they become the slaves of a venial, corrupt court and the hirelings of tyranny, all property is precarious and personal security at an end. A man may be stripped of all his possessions and murdered without the forms of law. Thus, it appears that all parts of this system arise ultimately from the people and are still independent of each other. There are other restraints which, though not directly named in this Constitution, yet are evidently discerned by every man of common observation. These are the government of the several states and the spirit of the liberty in the people. Are we wronged or injured? Are our immediate representatives to those whom we ought to apply? Their power and influence will still be great, but should any servants of the people, however eminent their stations, attempt to enslave them from this spirit of liberty, such opposition would arise as would bring them to the scaffold. But admitting that there are dangers in accepting the general government, yet are there greater hazards in rejecting it? Such is, Mr. President, the state of our affairs that it is not our power to carve for ourselves. To avoid the greatest and choose the least of these two evils is all that we can do. What then will the probable effects of this Constitution be rejected? Have we not reason to fear new commons from this commonwealth? If they arise, can we be always certain that they will be furnished with a citizen who, though possessed of extensive influence and the greatest abilities, will make no other use of them, quiet to the tumult of people, to prevent civil war and restore the usual course of law and justice? Are we not in danger from other states when their interests or prejudices are opposite to ours? And in such senses of hostile contention, will not some Sylla drench the land in blood, or will some Cromwell or Caesar lay out our liberties prostrate at his feet? Will not foreign nations attack us in our weak, divided condition, and once more render us provinces to some potentate of Europe? Or will these powers to whom we are indebted lie quietly? They certainly will not. They are now waiting for our decision, but when they once see that our union is broken and they will be determined to neglect them, they will issue out letters of marque, reprisal, and entirely destroy our commerce. And he goes on and on, but he is basically selling here this concept that it is literally for the liberty of the union that this Constitution is providing, that they need to become a member of the Union and accepting this Constitution. What's really interesting, though, is they do not highlight as much as the Virginians, as well as I think you'll find in North Carolina and in Pennsylvania, some of these other issues. I think they really look, and I love the language of Massachusetts compared to New York, where I think Alexander Hamilton ruined the ratification debates because he injected so much theory. But this right here, when you read the Massachusetts ratification debates, and my friends, it's really not that, it's maybe 150, 160 pages. And you can go to the Avalon Project, I believe that's Yale University, and be able to pull these things in. Do that. Pull these things in, and I will guarantee you, you'll really learn a good grasp of what was going on in their paradigms back then. This is it for the terrestrial stations, and as soon as this is over, I will tell you what we're doing tomorrow. And And so what we're doing tomorrow is I'm going to start off with the North Carolina debates. I'm going to try to give you a overview of what happened in North Carolina, and that way we can start digging into those great debates that actually occurred in North Carolina. And so with that, my friends, I am G.R. Mobley. I am Reclaiming the Republic with your help, and I'm empowering you with education, the greatest thing I can give you. Thank you very much.